KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up in this morning's second hour of Forum, we talk with media critic and founder of FAIR, Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, Jeff Cohen, who gives an insider's account of the world of cable news and corporate media. He joins us after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to the second hour of this morning's Forum. In 1986, Jeff Cohen launched the media watch group FAIR and became founder and director of an organization known for its leftist politics and its zeal in exposing media bias and corporate censorship. FAIR, which stood for Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, still does, spokespeople were, well, mainly white guys, but they also saw themselves as bringing attention to the importance of minority and dissenting voices. Jeff Cohen went into what he may well have called the belly of the corporate media beast, working as a co-host of Crossfire on CNN, a weekly panelist on Fox News, and a daily commentator on MSNBC, where he was also senior producer of The Donahue Show prior to its being terminated right before the Iraq War. He describes his work as, at least the time he spent inside these various news agencies, is like being a medieval vegetarian in the sausage factory of TV news, and he's the author of a number of books, including a new one called Cable News Confidential, My Misadventures in Corporate Media with a Foretower by Jim Hightower. And good to see you.
Great to be here.
Well, let me begin where you begin, because I think it's all too emblematic of what you're getting at in this book. We began with India and Pakistan on the verge of possible nuclear war. And on the brink, what is Fox News paying attention to? Well, JonBenet, of course, O.J., and the use of Lewinsky as a sex act on Law and Order. And we never get to India and Pakistan.
Right. I mean, that was my main complaint about cable news, even in places where I was able to say things. It was always the topics that were so weird. You know, you're referring to an era when Musharraf had the military coup in Pakistan, and these two countries are really on high nuclear alert. And I sit down for my regular show. We have no mention of India, no mention of Pakistan, no mention of nukes. And I remember walking out of the studio that day, and what popped into my mind was that bumper sticker, the ironic one from the 80s, one nuclear bomb can ruin your whole day.
But of course, many people said 9/11 ruined the whole, changed all this. Now, that suddenly news became more of a staple. We weren't talking so much about Gary Condon anymore. We were talking about news stories.
How long did that last? I mean, I can remember this summer, when a sick puppy took credit for having sex with a six-year-old girl and killing her, JonBenet Ramsey. I'm talking about this guy, John Mark Carr, who was apprehended in Thailand. And they flew him from Thailand to California to Colorado, which is where this young girl was killed 10 years ago. And they treated this guy, John Mark Carr, on cable news. I couldn't turn it off. All the cable news channels, plus much of broadcast TV news. What is he wearing? What is he eating? Is he laughing? They treated him like a world historical figure, almost like Nelson Mandela getting out of prison, but bigger. And, you know, when you think about that, that was a time where there were two wars going on in the Middle East. There were important court decisions. And cable, quote, news, unquote, is focused on that nonsense. I mean, that's part of, I think, what you get when a handful of corporations dominate TV news. It becomes celebrity fluff, lurid crime stories, anything but the big issues, especially economic issues. Those are almost off limits in big corporate media now.
Well, of course, you know the old adage, you give them what they want. I mean, this is presumably what brings in their numbers, at least as they see it. You call it disinfotainment, and you say it's all a step above mud wrestling and maybe a kind of news of soap opera, and I certainly readily agree, but it would seem as if that's maybe part of the dumbing down of America.
Well, I would like to say that that's the only way to get ratings, and it is once you take half of the stories off of the docket. if there's a whole group of stories that you can't even talk about, well, then these soft tabloid stories become the only ones that will get you ratings. I mean, look, I was at MSNBC in the run-up to the war in Iraq. I was the senior producer on Phil Donahue, as you mentioned, and I had been on the air till I lost my time when the war approached. And there's no doubt that had we been the one place for dissenting views about that impending invasion of Iraq, and I talked to management, top management of MSNBC week after week with arguments, our ratings could have soared. They knew it. But we were less interested in having big ratings than in tamping down content. They were more fearful of polarizing with the Bush administration when Bush's popularity was high and we were heading toward war. So it was tamping down content rather than revving up ratings that cared to management. And I believe that there's all sorts of stories that could get big news ratings, but they won't be covered because they're blockbuster, not because they won't turn out an audience. They're too tough. They're
I agree with you. I think many would agree with you. And yet, you know, you talk about Donahue, a kind of telling moment for me was when Donahue came out in a dress. You remember? I mean, this is before the MSNBC avatar of Donahue's. But he came out in a dress, and really what it spoke of and what it signified was the sense that tabloid kind of silly things like that or things that cause sensation or shock had taken over. I mean, Oprah was passing him way up with those kinds of things, which he's doing right. Not so much as perhaps now because he's got the popularity. But certainly you were seeing Jerry Springer's phenomenon begin. You were seeing, or on the dawn of that, you were seeing Geraldo doing all this tabloid stuff. It was a different era, and the era is still with us, except if anything, it's been
yeah, it's gotten worse. In fairness to Phil on that incident with the dress, I mean, one thing he'd always been big on was questioning gender roles and getting discussions about gender roles. First guy to talk about gay rights on TV.
But he was talking about ratings, too, at that time.
No doubt. Phil's a great entertainer. There's no doubt about it. But the fact is that Phil is too tough for mainstream media today. That's the interesting thing. He's too hard news. He's too independent. I mean, I can tell you, when I was the senior producer on the Donahue show, and this is all in the book, in the last months of Donahue, management was so timid and turning the screws on us because the war was coming. We were ordered, every time we booked one guest who was anti-war, we had to book two that were pro-war. If we booked two guests on the left, we had to have three on the right. At one meeting, a producer suggested booking Michael Moore, and she was told that for balance, she would need three right-wingers. And, you know, privately, I thought about proposing Noam Chomsky as a guest, but our stage couldn't accommodate the 28 right-wingers we would have needed.
Well, so, I just remember Marvin Kalb saying to me, this thought about Noam Chomsky not being on TV, on cable, or on when Ted Koppel was hosting Nightline, has more to do with the fact that Noam Chomsky is someone, you know, who's been on this program a number of times and whom I respect, that he's too academic, that he talks too much. You can't give that. It's not even his politics, was what Kalb was saying.
Trust me, you are right. It's both. But in most instances, and I, as you know, I've known Chomsky for decades, it's often his politics.
But it's fear on the part of executives, you point
out
in your
book.
And it's not only fear on their part. It's the fact that I think when you talked about going to meeting Roger Ailes and those people, you said, you know, they're tame by comparison in terms of right-wingers to people who are running the show.
Well, who knew? You know, I went over to when I didn't get the job at Crossfire, I was tested to be the permanent co-host from the left at Crossfire in 96. My career was saved in TV news by, of all people, Rupert Murdoch, the media mogul, and Roger Ailes, who he hired to run Fox News. Now, Roger Ailes had no background in journalism, but he was great at the 30-second attack ads at Democrats. And I think in Rupert Murdoch's mind, he was saying to himself, wow, look what this guy can do in 30 seconds. Imagine what he could do 24/7 with the news channel. So I knew all about Ailes and how right-wing he was. The first news anchor was Tony Snow at Fox, and now he's the spokesperson for Bush. I knew about those guys. What I didn't know till I'd been there a while, and I lasted 5 years at Fox News Channel and tell their dirty secrets, I didn't know these guys were moderates compared to John Moody, who really runs the operation at Fox News. This guy is so far right. He believes that, like, the New York Times is infested with Sandinista-loving reporters. And you've got at Fox News, even the weather and sports guys are rabid right-wingers. And it was, people ask me, how did I last 5 years? It was being a progressive at Fox News is like being a feminist at the Augusta Golf you know, Augusta National Golf Club. It's you're completely out of environment. It's like a cross-cultural experience, almost an out-of-body experience. But by hanging around there, I was able to learn a real lot about how, I mean, Fox News is an exception. Most places are corporate centrist, afraid of being accused of liberal.
You were embedded.
I was deeply embedded.
Right? I mean, in fact, I know you felt a little guilty about taking pay from some of these people who you saw as your political enemies and too far on the right from your ideology views. But the fact of the matter is you were an advocate. You know?
Right. Well, look, the few media critics have been given a front row seat inside the media outlets I was condemning. You know, there aren't many media critics that have gotten such an inside view. And it's not till you get inside that you realize how pathological it is.
How lacking in journalism?
Journalism, don't even. I didn't hear that word used when I. The only one who used the word journalism when I was at some of these news channels was me. And I'd realize I was talking by these executives, especially at MSNBC. And as you say, I started talking ratings to them. And I said, look, Amy Goodman's show is booming. These blogs that have just started out, they're booming. If we are the one place on cable news that gives a dissenting view on this impending invasion, our ratings are going to be booming. They didn't argue with me. I think that's the interesting thing. At that point, I realized that even ratings wasn't going to win me the argument because they were more interested in not polarizing with the Bush administration than having anything like good journalism.
So how do we explain the phenomenon of Keith Olbermann now?
I think times have changed a little bit, and Olbermann, I think, could be on thin ice himself if things changed back. I mean, when
Billy have quite a following, though.
Yeah, and so could we have. And we were the most watched. The Phil Donahue Show in primetime MSNBC was the most watched program on that channel when it was canceled, which pretty much says all you need to know. The day after we were canceled, this memo, the internal NBC memo leaked out that was never supposed to get public. And it said, Donahue represents, quote, a difficult public face for NBC in a time of war. He seems to delight in presenting guests who are anti-war, anti-Bush, and skeptical of the administration's motives, unquote. Well, I went into journalism when I was youngster because I thought in a free society what journalists do is they present skeptics and critics of those in power. And the NBC memo goes on to describe their nightmare scenario where Donahue would become, quote, a home for the liberal anti-war agenda at the same time that our competitors are waving the flag at every opportunity, unquote. What did NBC do? Got rid of Donahue, stifled journalism, stifled dissent, picked up the flag. And what I saw not just at MSNBC, but throughout TV news, and you could include NPR and PBS, when journalists are so busy waving flags, they often don't have the energy to do their jobs, which is to ask the tough questions before our young men and women are sent overseas to kill and be killed. That's what didn't happen. It was too much flag waving throughout the media.
A lot of the philosophy that's developed, both before you went into working in the media and now that you've seen it from the inside, has to do with this corporate monolith. Ben Bagdikian was the first one to put out the clarion call and say, you know, there's much too much control by too few institutions. And the idea is that everything's being influenced because of that politically. I find myself waxing and waning on that, just, you know, as someone who works in the media also, because, as you point out in your book, the corporate media is mainly influenced by and mainly concerned about ratings and profit and selling, regardless of whether they were timorous when it came to, you know, striking out like you were suggesting before when the Iraq War began. That's almost... It directly addresses the notion that content doesn't matter a whole lot to them, whatever the content is.
I think not. I think as these media operations get bigger, and I met management at three of the biggest TV news places, I think the people that rise to the top, I describe it in the book as the opposite of a meritocracy. Meritocracy is, everyone says they're for that, conservatives especially. You know, advancement is based on your ability or achievement. What we have in TV news is the opposite, and it's because of this corporate ownership. It's called a kakistocracy. It literally means rule by the worst. It's where the least...
It's a Peter principle.
The least principled rise to the top. The people at the top now are great at corporate politics, great at not polarizing with anyone in power, great at not offending commercial sponsors. That's key. And they have nothing to do with journalism. And the more that these the more that the media goes in the hands of these fewer companies, the more that happens. Think about the run-up to the war, which was clearly one of the worst moments in the history of U.S. journalism, the run-up to the Iraq War. At the same time that we were given these orders basically to suppress points of view, suppress dissent at MSNBC, it was happening at CNN, it was happening elsewhere, the lobbyists for these half a dozen corporations were going to the Bush administration with their palms up, asking, pressuring the FCC to allow the rules to change so that the media titans could become even more titanic. And the owners are doing that. The lobbyists are doing that. Management knows that's happening. Sometimes at Donahue, we'd be scratching our heads saying, what are they so afraid of having an occasional liberal guest on our show? And it wasn't, I was a little shell-shocked when we got terminated 3 weeks before the war. After a few months, it dawned on me where this pressure was coming from. And a lot of it was the fact that the media are in the hands of a few corporations and they want even more power. And the last thing they want is any independent journalism that would get MSNBC or perhaps CNN isolated as a network that was giving the Bush administration troubles, because they wanted the Bush administration to give away the store, and that almost happened except for a popular insurrection.
Talking to Jeff Cohen, his new book is called Cable News Confidential, My Misadventures in Corporate Media. This is a classic story about NBC spiking a story, a nuclear story, and General Electric supposedly had some investments that were at least part of the reason behind, often attributed as part of the reason behind the spiking of the story. Do the network executives really care about those kinds of things as much as you and, say, Fair always claim that they do? I mean, particularly since you were on the inside and you saw to what extent they were almost removed from everything. All they cared about was maybe placating the Bush administration.
Yeah, you want to know the truth? Because you used to interview me when I had started Fair, and people at Fair would say, what's it like? You know, what are you learning? I would say to them, I'd go to the Fair office and say, you know, everything you guys are saying about the media is true, except it's far worse than you ever knew.
But then we were hearing at that time from Reed Irvine, who was on the other side, talk about crossfires, from Accuracy and Media, saying just the opposite kinds of things. The liberals are in control. It's what you hear as a screed from Sean Hannity and all these people, Limbaugh. By the way, you guys, I guess, did the number on Limbaugh even before Al Franken, I realized.
But anyway. We were premature.
You know what I'm saying. There's a sense from the other side that it's liberal-dominated.
Michael, look, the people that yell that the media are liberal-dominated, besides not having evidence, are usually the ones who have the dominant voices on TV. I mean, the fact that Limbaugh's got his 550 channels and Sean Hannity has his 510 channels and Sean Hannity's on TV and Bill O'Reilly's dominant on TV and radio, and these guys are claiming that the media, you know, suppresses conservative voices, that doesn't pass the laugh test. But, I mean, when I got on the inside, when I was tested at CNN, one thing they were concerned about, when there was, I guess, a brief moment, they may have actually considered me to be the co-host every night for Crossfire from the left. They were worried that because of my background, that I would be often criticizing the corporate sponsor. Who was the corporate sponsor during my period? General Electric.
When you were on Fox, you criticized Fox, didn't you?
Yeah, that's the ironic thing.
You write that in the book.
Yeah, nobody, I sure do. I sure do. The one place that I found an exception to this rule was Fox News. As long as you were on the weekends, as long as you were on their media criticism show, you'll notice that there's no show called Hannity and Cohen.
But look at their biggest bully, O'Reilly. I mean, he comes and criticizes them. I mean, he's got enormous clout because of his numbers and so forth. When they pulled that whole OJ deal and wanted that interview, you know, he was right there as a very blistering critic.
Yeah, and again, I guess there's a couple exceptions to every dominant rule. The rule at Fox News is it's Murdoch's to do with, to play with, to push the candidates that he wants. I should point out that Murdoch just did a fundraiser last summer for Hillary Clinton. Murdoch hedges his bets. You know, he's got his friends in the Republican Party and the corporate wing of the Democratic Party. But, I mean, when I got on the inside, I did see it was worse. There's more timidity than you ever knew. There's more fear of corporate sponsors than you ever knew. There's more fear of conservatives and offending conservatives, especially if they're up. Olbermann, you raised, that's an important, again, another exception to the rule. The environment in the political world has changed a little bit in a few years. And Oberman's the first one who will tell you, and he said recently on C-SPAN.
His stock goes up as Bush's goes down, too.
It's because Bush's popularity is so low that Oberman can do what he did. We were not able to do it. In fact, we were fired for doing far less.
And that was a different era. Maybe we're out of it now, you think?
Yeah. I mean, if we were out of it now, here, you know, I have
Well, now, wait a minute. Toward the end of your book, you start talking about media mobilization that takes your breath away, inspiration of media reform movement, the Internet. I mean, there are a lot of real
it's great stuff.
Signs,
yeah. It's great stuff as long as you turn off corporate media, as millions of people have, especially young people and independent-minded people. That's the reason these other things are booming. Community radio is booming. Local public radio is booming. You know, the joke at The Nation magazine, Bush may be bad for the country, but it's great for the nation. You know, you have blogs that started in 2002 that now have millions of viewers.
And these don't have, the vast numbers that we associate with network news as opposed to these cable news outlets. For example, cable news outlets don't even do as well, any of them, as NPR does.
Yeah, cable news is small in number but influential in its agenda setting. But as I say, my book ends on an optimistic note because there's so much alternative stuff happening. First time in history, the FCC was going to eliminate all the rules on how much concentration there could be in the media. Do you know the FCC got literally millions of emails, crashed their computers, and the public got involved for once in a media policy issue, which was traditionally behind closed doors. You know, the media lobbyists and the FCC would fix things. So there's some great things happening in media activism. When I started FAIR 20 years ago, our slogan was, you know, don't take the media lying down. And it doesn't seem as quixotic now, because there's a huge media reform conference coming up in Memphis. Independent media is growing. Media skepticism is growing. What kind of commentary is it on TV news that the best two programs of news and politics are on the Comedy Channel? To me, you know, Jon Stewart and Colbert, to me that says a lot. And I'm excited that people are not tolerating. A lot of this move, by the way, started in the run-up to the Iraq War. People didn't trust the TV networks. They were looking even for BBC. Which wasn't great, but better than our networks. And I just think there's been a lot of movement in the last few years toward independent media, and that's a great thing. Amy Goodman's show, Democracy Now!, moved from radio to TV, and it's utterly booming. Her staff keeps growing.
I didn't even know that Amy's on TV. What is she?
Oh, yeah. She's on two satellite. She's on both Link TV and Free Speech TV, which are on the two satellites, and she's on public access across the country, perhaps. The biggest single show on public
it's
access.
It's her show. It's like one of my old colleagues used to say Radio with Pictures.
Yeah, it's better than that. It started as Radio with Pictures, and now they're actually doing some interesting things with video on the Amy Goodman show, Democracy Now!
Talking with Jeff Cohen, the founder of Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting. His book is called Cable News Confidential, which Barbara Einreich says will ensure the fact that he won't work in television anymore, at least corporate television. And he does make the distinction in talking about the corporate media between independent media and not what you say shouldn't be called alternative media, that is corporate media versus what he calls independent media. Let me open the phone lines and invite those of you listening to join us with any questions or comments you may have, and you are welcome to do that now. Our toll-free number is 866-733-6786. Whether you're listening to us on radio, Internet, or Sirius satellite, we welcome your calls. And again, the phones are open and available to you. It's toll-free, 866-733-6786. You can also email us, and our email address is forum@kqed.org. And Jeff Cohen, I should mention, Saturday, December 9th is going to be the Loudoun Nelson Community Center over in Santa Cruz, and is going to be with Scott Ritter. He'll also be at San Jose on the 9th at 4 p.m. at the SEIU local 715 Hall with Scott Ritter, and Sunday, December 10th at Olney Hall at College of Marin in Kentfield. And that's at 2 p.m. And then at 7 o'clock at the First Congregational Church of Oakland, emceed by my old friend Larry Bensky. That's Sunday, December the 10th. So lots of activity here in the Bay Area for Jeff Cohen. You can join us and talk with him directly. In fact, we'll do that after this. Spending the hour with Jeff Cohen, who is the founder of FAIR, Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, and has come out with a book about his embedded time in corporate media. In fact, it's called Cable News Confidential, My Misadventures in Corporate Media, and you get portraits of, well, all the people that many people love to hate and some people love to love, like Pat Buchanan and Bill O'Reilly and Robert Novak. Jeff has had experiences with all of them, and this is a personal story as well as a kind of from the inside investigative journalistic piece. Let me go to your calls, and let's go first to David. Good morning.
Hi there. Good morning. Am I on now?
You are on, sir.
Okay. I have a couple of points. One is the motto, as it were, speak truth to power. We've been hearing that a lot lately in terms of Gates and one piece of government talking to another, but the media is afraid to speak truth to power. And my second point was that if we pay attention to the job of any corporate manager of, at any level in a corporation, it is to advance their own resume.
Yeah, I found that the on your second point, that the people who run these news outlets are really good at one thing, and it's corporate gamesmanship and politics. And they often have nothing to do with journalism. And when you say speak truth to power, well, General Electric and Rupert Murdoch, that is power. They are the power. Those are some of the most powerful corporations in the world, Time Warner, Disney. They have interests in trade, taxes, corporate welfare. There's virtually not an issue that can be discussed on TV news that doesn't in some way impact the bottom line of these huge media corporations. Now, there, as I say in the book, there are so many good journalists in mainstream media, including at Fox News, but they're usually the least powerful people, often young people, often very energetic, but they're powerless, and especially powerless in the advent of war and its strict corporate hierarchy. We were getting orders at MSNBC. I'm appearing with Scott Ritter this weekend. When we used to talk about booking Scott Ritter on the Phil Donahue show at MSNBC, it was almost like clockwork. We would hear this smear. Well, we hear that he's pocketing covert funds from the Saddam Hussein government. Completely false, aimed at taking this very effective voice, perhaps the most articulate dissenter, having been a U.S. Marine and a former U.N. weapons inspector in Iraq.
He was involved in a film that had some money coming.
Yeah, but there was no. It was not Saddam Hussein's money.
No, but there was money coming from the Middle East.
No.
As I understood it.
No, it was an Iraqi-American business. Again, it was complete. Any journalist who wanted the facts could have talked to Scott Ritter. They didn't want the facts at MSNBC. They just wanted him off the air. And the irony with him being smeared. One day, Jerry Nachman, the editor-in-chief, goes on the air with this smear. No evidence.
And Jerry used to work in this market, in fact, with KCBS for many years.
A few years later, I learned that there was a guy who was receiving covert government funds that I was regularly debating on MSNBC. The covert funder was the Bush administration. I'm talking about Armstrong Williams, mm-hmm. who received nearly $250,000 from Bush's Department of Education to promote No Child Left Behind. Somehow they didn't invite me into Bush's No Pundit Left Behind program. I didn't get my invitation.
Let me thank David for the call. Let's move on to more calls, and we move to Berkeley. Peter, morning.
Hi. Jeff, first of all, thank you for your work. I mean, you're an unbelievable hero, and or a believable hero, I should say.
Thank you.
And it's really great what you do. For a long time, I've participated in promoting what I call universal peace ethics. And I've also had a dream of helping someday to bring the world together with global televised town meetings. Now, you worked with Phil Donahue. Those were really terrific space bridges that we had in the late 80s. And they did a tremendous amount of good. Do you see some hope for inspiring these big corporate owners to come together globally? I mean, you couldn't get any bigger than that. They like big, you know what I mean?
And they like global. There hasn't been someone who stepped forward like Phil Donahue did in the 80s. Maybe the closest thing was Ted Koppel, who did some good work trying to get Israelis and Palestinians talking. It's just not happening now. Clearly, we need global television bridges between the Arab and Islamic world and the Western world, especially the United States. I'd like to see someone with the vision of a Phil Donahue step forward and do that kind of thing today.
Thank you, Peter, for your call. And we go next to Nancy. Hi, Nancy.
Hi.
Good morning. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you. My criticism these days is that NPR, public radio, is getting more and more conservative. I couldn't believe my ears yesterday on the the business show. Marketplace.
That's not produced by NPR, Nancy. It's produced by Public Radio International.
Okay, well, public radio, whatever. Anyways, who did they have on Newt Gingrich talking about health care. I mean, that was just, you know, Newt Gingrich, isn't he a crook? Wasn't he thrown out of Congress? And on health care, I mean, it was just horrendous.
Hey, Nancy, I've done an interview with Newt Gingrich. I've had a lot of these luminaries from the right on forum. You know, when you're giving voices to people on the right, sometimes it's just a matter of the marketplace of ideas. You want people to be exposed to even ideas that they may find disagreeable.
Having somebody like Newt Gingrich and discussing certain things, but to have a quip from him on health care, I just thought was just over the top.
Well, that got to you, obviously.
Well, and wait, and the issue to be asked, we know that Michael Krasny has diverse guests, but does Marketplace have activists from the left and leaders of labor unions? They do, but it's very rare. And I share Nancy's criticism of NPR's national news. I think I've traveled all over the country on this book tour, and what you find is there's local programs like Forum that have huge followings, and people are really involved because of the diversity of the guests on shows like this. And then you listen, you hear the complaints about what comes out of Washington, or in the case of Marketplace, which is on so many NPR stations out of Los Angeles, that it's just, it's very much corporatist. It's a narrow spectrum. It's a spectrum often from GE to GM. I think NPR National News is shameful in how timid it is. You think about who did good reporting in the run-up to the Iraq War. Walter Pincus at Washington Post, but his stories were usually on page 18. There were a couple great reporters at Knight Ridder. It's hard to find people at NPR that stand out as having stood up against this rush to war. And I hear this criticism a lot of national programming coming out of Washington from NPR, and I share the criticism.
And I thank Nancy for her call. Some emails here. Here's Kata said, want to point out the only time I've heard Fox criticized, made fun of, or satirized was on The Simpsons, which is a Fox show. Okay. Richard writes, I'm one of those who deplore the dumbing down of America and view the media as major players in our current extremity. Given the lack of intelligent leadership in the media, how can we smarten up America?
America is getting smartened up, I believe. Unfortunately, it's still a minority of people that are taking media consumption into their own hands. They're making demands on mainstream media, and if mainstream media doesn't change, they're building alternatives. And I just, when you look at the growth of independent media, nonprofit media, public media, community radio, independent blogs and websites, commondreams.org booming, alternet.org booming, you're seeing that a lot of it is a migration away from corporate media, which is so dumb, so irrelevant, so tabloid, so timid. I feel there's good things happening. And the good thing is that the Internet has allowed people that are in the independent media to find an audience. My friend Robert Greenwald makes these political documentaries. How did he raise the money for his last documentary on corporate profiteering from the war in Iraq, Iraq for Sale? He asked producers to donate $50. I was one. He asked thousands of people, would you donate $50 so I can finance my next movie? And then he uses the Internet to find a big audience. When Robert Greenwald put out Outfoxed, Rupert Murdoch's War on Journalism about the problems of corporate media, when it was released in the summer of 2004, it was the top-rated DVD, top-selling DVD on Amazon. And that's, again, through Internet marketing. So the Internet has allowed independent voices to be heard. And even if you're a filmmaker or you have a radio show, the Internet has allowed you to find an audience in new ways. That's why the big phone companies and the big cable companies want to change the Internet from the free forum that it is now.
It's changed the whole hopeful, sanguine notion that you're giving us here.
Yes.
However, the fact is that most people get their news from TV news still.
Yeah,
and especially during great majority.
Especially during times of crisis, during times of war, during times of an election. But there is this migration. I mean, the reason I wrote the book is because I know so many people still get their news from TV, and I wanted to debunk it. But I am thrilled that a lot of people are turning it off and going elsewhere.
Well, let's see. We've got a listener here. My Michael says, Amy Goodman is also on Midnight on KRCB, PBS from Sonoma County, Channel 22, just of interest here. And another listener says, I'm glad Mr. Cohen's on forum. I received the fair emails, which are very enlightening. What does he think about English Al Jazeera? Have they been successful in attempts to get on cable? Do you know, John?
They can't get on.
They just can't at all, right?
English-speaking Al Jazeera, one of the top bosses there is Dave Marish, who was at ABC and worked with Nightline. And they can't get on American cable systems. It's stunning. I talk about a marketplace of idea. It's a great notion. You and I aspire to it. We wish it was happening. the marketplace of ideas doesn't happen when there's a few companies that are the gatekeepers.
There's another listener who says she tried to check your book out from a San Mateo County Library. It's not available. I wonder if there's a political reason. Well, more likely probably not. But let me go to more of your calls. From Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, Al, you're on.
Hello, yes. One, I wanted to thank Jeff Cohen for his work. I actually stumbled upon his work accidentally in the 80s and 90s. And I always thought there was something wrong with the media in terms of the bias, and then I started reading the counts of guests in terms of who was invited to what shows, and I was absolutely stunned. So thank him, one, for his work. Second of all, I have to tell you, as a graduate-level educated person, I don't listen to corporate media in the United States anymore. I will read the New York Times once or twice a week, the Philadelphia Inquirer possibly, but, you know, I'm getting my news via the Internet, the CBC and the BBC. I've really written off America media as very uncritical, non-thinking type of work, and I just wanted to put that out there. I have to tell you, I'm just one of those folks that have dropped out and will tune in elsewhere for my news.
I suspect you are not alone, sir, and I thank you for that call.
You are sure are not alone, and I think it's important that people go to the Internet, and they're finding alternet.org, Common Dreams, Tom Paine, BuzzFlash, Truthout, you name it. I mean, it's really an important migration away from these corporate outlets to independent outlets. Those independent outlets may not have great resources, but they have great independence.
Leon, you're on. Good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. Listen, a few things. I love FAIR, subscribe to it, and I listen to Amy, or actually I watch Amy Goodman on Channel 22. And my question is, I also watch CNN, right? Not as much as I used to, but I watch it. And I'm not an intellectual or anything. I always consider myself just a normal, average, everyday guy. And watching Amy Goodman put a light on what was happening in Oaxaca weeks before it hit CNN. And even when it hit CNN, they didn't mention that there was an American journalist that was killed in Oaxaca. And you know, that really, I mean, it shocked me. Just watching what happened in Oaxaca unfold on Democracy Now, it shocked me, and it made me think, what if the rest of the country knew what was going on? I mean, like, the people that don't watch, you know, the people that don't listen to Pacifica or watch Amy Goodman, or, you know, they just stick to corporate news. How could the public, you know, like, make the big corporate entities, and I'm not talking about Fox, but I mean, like, make corporate news, pay attention, to report the news that's really important, not about Britney Spears, you know, divorce or, you know, the fluff, but how can we, as the public, put pressure on corporate news outlets to, like, you know, do the news, and I'll take the comments off the air.
Thank you for the call.
One thing is that people should go to FAIR.org and join the activist network, and then you can make your voice heard with amplification, and that sometimes has impact. FAIR lately has been talking about Glenn Beck. Have you ever watched him on CNN?
I have.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I wrote a column recently. It's on jeffcohen.org. You know, the column is Glenn Beck and so many of these others that are on the media now, all they're doing is like pushing for confrontation with Iran. That's what the Glenn Beck show is. It should be called Target Iran every night on CNN headline news. And never are these people held accountable for their role prior to the last mess we got into with Iraq. Glenn Beck, of course, was a Clear Channel talk radio screamer.
He was more right than thou type.
Yeah,
of
thing. Just distributed by Clear Channel. He called Cindy Sheehan a prostitute. He fantasized about strangling Michael Moore to death, is what he'd do on the air. He prayed for the violent death of Congressman Dennis Kucinich. This is the tenor of his show before CNN hired him and gave him 1 hour of prime time. And so no one holds him to task for being so totally wrong about how the war in Iraq was going to go. And now CNN gives him a perch to talk about Iran. There's so many others that have that same pass. They have a free pass. When I was at MSNBC, the last time I ever appeared on the air, it was to debate Frank Gaffney. Frank Gaffney is.
He's been on this program.
I'm sure he's been on every show. He's a regular on other shows. He's an Uber hawk, Reagan defense official. He convinced someone at MSNBC that he should give another reason for why we needed to invade Iraq. Not only was Saddam Hussein behind 9/11, said Gaffney, but he was also somehow Iraq was involved in Oklahoma City and was behind Timothy McVeigh. And I remember saying on the air that I thought Gaffney was in need of psychiatric care, and I wasn't proud of, you know, it was my worst moment as a TV pundit, but I never appeared on MSNBC again. Gaffney, who was so wrong about Iraq, is now denouncing people today who are appeasing Iran. And never in the mainstream media are you held accountable for how you were wrong the last war. Indeed, Frank Gaffney's got this huge perch. Glenn Beck is bigger than ever. These people that were so wrong are still so on the air.
Let me thank the caller and go to more of your calls. Meehan.
Yeah, hello?
Yes, sir, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. You know, over the last 4 or 5 years, if it weren't for shows like Democracy Now! And actually the Forum, which is the only show I listen to on NPR, I don't listen to Talk of the Nation, for example, I think I would go completely crazy and feel schizophrenic. A recent example is yesterday and today I've been noticing the coverage in the media of the Iraq Survey Group's findings, and I haven't heard mentioned anywhere that all 10 members, apparently, of this commission did not have an anti-war position before the war began. So I am pretty sure my views have been completely left out, and no wonder they haven't called for withdrawal with any reasonable timetable, let alone immediate withdrawal, which is what apparently a majority of Americans want. So I wanted to thank Jeff Cohen, and I have followed fair.org for a while and used to listen to Counterspin. So just wanted to thank him and
Thank you very much. I mean, it's great to hear this support for FAIR and hear that people are following FAIR. Someone had asked about our studies where we document who gets to speak on TV and radio and who doesn't. One of the last surveys that FAIR did, and I'm just the founder, I'm emeritus, was of the PBS NewsHour at the end of 2005, beginning of 2006, and they found in coverage of Iraq, for every advocate of bringing the troops home, there were 5 stay-the-course advocates, and that's just not balanced. This is at a time when there's substantial numbers of the American public are saying bring the troops home, and as this caller correctly says, many polls find that a majority of the Americans want the troops home within a year or within 18 months or at the outset within 2 years, and that point of view just isn't reflected among the wise men that are dominating corporate media today.
Before I go to more calls, just a couple of other things that I wanted to talk with you about in your book. One is the sense I have, there are a couple of jobs that you really felt should have been yours. I mean, in a way, it would be easy to read this as perhaps sour grapes. You understand that? Is that fair?
Perhaps. You could argue that I am sour about the fact that you can't represent the American left on TV news every night if you're actually on the left. There's no doubt I'm sour about that, but I mean, I was advocating for dozens of people other than myself before I ever started appearing on TV. So, yeah, I'm very sour of the suppression of half of the political spectrum. This last caller talked about it, that, you know, half
of
the...
All political? Some of it personal, too?
Well, I'm a nice guy.
I mean, well, actually, you know, it's interesting you should say that because you are a nice guy. And
how did I last 5 years at Fox News if I didn't have good people skills? It can't be that I, like, throw tantrums and I can't get along with people, or I never would have lasted with my viewpoint at Fox News. It is political.
But some of these people who it's so easy to go after for somebody from your side of the political spectrum, I mean, Buchanan, Novak, I mean, these are real targets, enemies, in fact, one could say. And yet they come across, even O'Reilly to some extent, in the way you shape presenting their characters as actually kind of amicable guys. Maybe it's because you're amicable, but, you know, it's
right.
Personal from the political.
Look, yeah, I agree that there's a lot of personality involved in media. The main reason that progressives have not been given the forums that the right wing has is political. It is because of corporate ownership. I've heard every excuse over the decades from I've had these discussions with the media managers that were making the decisions. There was never coherent explanation. Sometimes you'd, well, leftists aren't funny. You know, they're talking about Molly Ivins, Barbara Ehrenreich, Michael Moore. I mean, none of these arguments have ever made sense on why they continuously, relentlessly suppress progressives. I mean, if Amy Goodman was given a show in prime time on CNN Headline News, her ratings would be far bigger than Glenn Beck, and I think executives at CNN know that. But sometimes she might be naming the corporate sponsors because they are benefiting from some of these sweatshops when Amy Goodman does stories of third world countries.
They're also afraid they're going to be identified with something that's marginal in their minds, don't you think? That the left is marginal. Yeah.
Well, right. If the left is marginal, but it can get bigger audience than Glenn Beck, then it can't be marginal. You were the one who was saying that these cable news channels really have small audiences. If you increase your audience from 400,000 to 1 million at MSNBC, it's stunning. We could have done that if they let Phil Donahue be Phil Donahue, but they did not want independent content. That mattered to them more than ratings. And if you read my book, there's no way you could come away with any other conclusion that the firing of Donahue was political and it hurt their ratings to get rid of a guy like Donahue.
Peter, you're on. Good morning.
Good morning. Hey, I've got kind of two versions of a question here, and thank you very much for the show. The first is I'm wondering if the guest can comment. It seems often that the media is just kind of frankly lazy about the frames and the storylines that they pursue. So, for instance, in the run-up to the war, there were innumerable articles which made a comparison to the 1960s. And, you know, was the opposition to the war like the 1960s or wasn't it, and why, et cetera, which is kind of trite. Then, you know, with deference, Michael, I think sometimes there's a very limited number of people who come on. So if you're going to talk about the peace movement, you know, we're going to bring out Todd Gitlin or Medea Benjamin. And as much as I often, you know, very much agree or respect those folks, there's a broader universe there. And it speaks to a kind of a little bit of a laziness. And I wonder if the same, and I'll just wrap this up in a second here, is true of, you know, Frank Gaffney and Richard Pearl, where, as you say, they are on over and over and over again as experts. But, you know, if we actually made a spreadsheet of how often Richard Pearl has been, you know, right in his policy prescriptions, he'd be batting about 100. You know, if it were minor league baseball, he wouldn't even make the team. And yet he's, you know, endlessly on as a expert. And is that about laziness, or have you seen, you know, actual editorial decisions to, you know, not look a little bit further afield in some of these situations?
The last thing they want to do is hold these hawks accountable, because as you say, they wouldn't get on the air just on the basis of inaccuracy. It would be said about them that these people are so wrong, why would we have them on the air? In my book, I describe all of these people that were asserting that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction. One guy I talk about is Ken Pollack, a former CIA analyst, a Brookings Institution fellow.
Ted Koppel's son-in-law, in fact, too.
Ken Pollack?
I think so. Yeah.
Always on, are you sure?
I think so. I don't know. We'll look it up.
Always on pushing for war with Iraq. And he went on the Oprah show and he said that Saddam could even use weapons of mass destruction against us in the U.S. mainland. After no weapons were found, he was asked about it. And he said, well, look, that was not me making that claim. That was me parroting the so-called experts. But Ken Pollack had been introduced day after day as an expert. And today, he's quoted in the New York Times front page stories about why it's dangerous to pull the troops out. Did that reporter give some context to the reader that this guy was completely wrong in the run-up to the war? No. Ken Pollack, Gaffney, these people are regulars, the Coulters, the Falwells. The catering to the right wing is too overwhelming for us to say that it's anything but a political bias. It's a fear of appearing liberal. If you're balanced in mainstream media between right and left, you'll be accused of being liberal, and they don't want to be accused of that.
I don't think Ann Coulter's afraid of being liberal. I mean,
No. I'm saying the people that make these booking choices are pandering to the right-wing guests. I saw it at every channel I was at.
Well, here's a view from another side of the spectrum. I used to trust Fair. By my junior year, I got tired with Fair's extreme left and anti-Israel bias, so I began sending my money to Camera instead. The amount of Chomskyist propaganda that flows from Fair's radio show, as well as Amy Goodman's, teaches one thing. All media, including the so-called independent one, should not be taken at face value.
Chomskyist. There's no substance to that. It's hard to respond.
I'm not sure if Mr. Cohen and Nancy, the caller, are aware NPR plays Democracy Now. The argument that NPR is not independent is preposterous.
And yeah, I want to make that point that Amy Goodman's show is on some PBS stations, some NPR stations, And that's a good thing. But the criticism I always hear, it's not of the Michael Krasny show, it's not of the local programming, it's this national programming, All Things Considered Morning Edition. It's the GE to GM spectrum. It's timid, it's tepid. Public broadcasting should do better than that.
But you do get these kind of criticisms. This is a listener named Tony. He says, I'm wondering why Michael Krasny sounds so defensive and seems to be an apologist for mainstream corporate media.
I've never thought Michael was an apologist. I know that Michael Krasny has put on dissenting views and media critics from the left ever since I've known him. I think it's his job to ask questions of all the guests he has.
Thank you. Here's Jane, who says, nice to hear Mr. Cohen's optimism about independent news media and the vital role of the Internet. Do you know the status of the recent attempt by phone companies to levy fees to website owners for routing traffic to their site? Any other threats on the horizon we should be aware of?
Yeah, the campaign now is to save the Internet as a free forum from the clutches of the big phone and cable companies. There's a website set up for that purpose called SaveTheInternet.com. And that's where people are going to make this fight. Now that the Democrats have Congress, there's no reason we can't win net neutrality, which would preserve the Internet so that citizen information is not pushed into the slow lane and commerce is pushed into the fast lane. I think we can be very optimistic about that now.
You did a good enlightening hour on that, which you can get on our archives or you can hear on podcasting. Always good to hear your voice, Jeff. Thanks for being with us. Jeff Cohen again, Cable News Confidential, My Misadventures in the Corporate Media, and he'll be appearing again with Scott Ritter Saturday, December 9th in San Jose, the SEIU Local 17 Hall at 4 p.m., and then Sunday at the College of Marin at Olney Hall at 2 p.m., and Sunday, 7 p.m., First Congregational Church in Oakland. We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, an hour is repeated 10 to 11 in the evening. And we want to thank our producers, Robin G. Anastasio-Mall, Hermione G. and Kevin Guillory, our interns, Elsa Chang, Barton Kreeth, Negar Gobadi, Mike Fisher, Mary Trail, and Leah Wellborn. Our engineer is Danny Bringer, and our executive producer is Raul Ramirez. And for all of us here at KQED Public and Alternative Radio, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Claude and Louise Rosenberg Jr. Family Foundation.